From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Today, our weekly visit to the United Nations. First up, the deputy spokesperson for the Secretary General of the United Nations. That's Farhan Haq, followed by Monica Grayley, the spokesperson for the President of the General Assembly.
Good afternoon, everyone. On Thursday morning, the Secretary General received the 2019 Charlemagne Prize in Aachen, Germany. In his remarks, he said that as a committed European and Secretary General of the United Nations, this prize is especially meaningful for him. The Secretary General will be back in New York on Monday. I have an update on the most recent reported allegations of sexual exploitation and abuse. This is for the first quarter of 2019, which concluded on the 31st of March. Please note that not all the allegations reported have been fully verified, and many are in the preliminary assessment phase. For the first quarter of this year, the United Nations received 37 allegations involving UN personnel, including civilian and uniformed personnel from peacekeeping, as well as personnel of agencies, funds, and programs. Of the 37 allegations related to UN personnel, there are 49 victims, 28 women and 11 girls, one boy, seven females of unknown age, one unknown adult, and one unknown child. 16 of these allegations are categorized as sexual abuse, 27 as sexual exploitation, 4 are of an unknown nature, and 2 have been categorized as other, of which 1 was closed. Of these 37 allegations, 1 has been substantiated through an investigation and has been referred to the member state. 4 allegations were not substantiated, 26 allegations are at various stages of investigation, and 6 allegations are under preliminary assessment to determine if there's sufficient information to investigate. We also received 33 allegations involving non-UN personnel working as implementing partners. These allegations involve 37 victims and 38 perpetrators. Meanwhile, our efforts to implement the Secretary General's strategy to combat sexual exploitation and abuse continue to be strengthened. In March, the 2018 Secretary General's Special Measures for Protection from Sexual Exploitation report was released, which contains updates to the information provided in the previous reports, including on prioritizing the rights and dignity of victims, ending impunity, engaging with member states, civil society, and external partners, and improving strategic communication for education and transparency. We are also continuing our efforts to engage with member states and encourage their heads of state and government to join the Secretary General's Circle of Leadership on Prevention of and Response to Sexual Exploitation and Abuse in UN Operations, which now stands at 74 members. The Secretary General also continues to encourage member states to become signatories to the Voluntary Compact with the Secretary General of the United Nations on the commitment to eliminate sexual exploitation and abuse. 101 member states have committed to this to date. And you have a rare treat because I have no fewer than 5 personnel announcements to tell you about. Today, the Secretary General is appointing Tatiana Valovaya of the Russian Federation as Director General of the United Nations Office in Geneva. She will succeed Michael Mahler of Denmark, to whom the Secretary General is grateful for his commitment and dedicated service to the organization. James Swan of the United States has been appointed Special Representative for Somalia and head of the UN Assistance Mission in Somalia. He will succeed Nicholas Haysom of South Africa, to whom the Secretary General is deeply grateful for his dedicated service in UNSOM and Somalia at a challenging time. Gilles Michaud of Canada will take over as Undersecretary General for Safety and Security. He will succeed Peter Drennan of Australia, to whom the Secretary General is grateful for his commitment and dedicated service to the organization. Najat Mala Mjid of Morocco will take over as Special Representative on Violence Against Children at the level of Assistant Secretary General. She will succeed Marta Santos Pais of Portugal, to whom the Secretary General is deeply grateful for her leadership and dedicated commitment during her tenure as the first Special Representative on Violence Against Children. And last but not least, Anita Bhatia of India will become the Assistant Secretary General for Resource Management, Sustainability, and Partnerships, and Deputy Executive Director of the UN Entity for Gender Equality and the Empowerment of Women, or UN Women for short. Full details are in their bios, which are being emailed and posted as I speak, so your email boxes will be very full. And for the record, I would like to remind you that yesterday afternoon, we announced the appointment of Major General Shivaram Kharel of Nepal as the acting head of mission and force commander of the UN Disengagement Force, Observer Force, UNDOF. This follows the sudden death of Major General Francis Vibsanziri of Ghana on the 19th of April. The Secretary General remembers and honors the late Major General Vibsanziri for his dedicated leadership of UNDOF and service in the United Nations. The humanitarian coordinator in Sudan today strongly condemned yesterday's attacks on humanitarian offices and the looting of aid supplies in the Kalma camp for internally displaced people in South Darfur. Kalma is one of Darfur's largest camps and is hosting some 128,000 people. Wee Yop Son, the humanitarian coordinator, called on authorities to swiftly investigate these attacks. In the past month, there have been at least two similar attacks at IDP camps in Darfur. Ms. Son stressed that attacks against aid workers violate international humanitarian law and jeopardize their ability to provide life-saving support to people in need. The UN Refugee Agency said that amid the clashes in Libya's capital, Tripoli, 149 vulnerable refugees and asylum seekers were safely evacuated today to Rome. The evacuees, nearly half of whom are children, are from Eritrea, Somalia, Sudan, and Ethiopia, and many need medical treatment and are malnourished. These people were moved from a UNHCR facility after surviving for months in dire conditions in detention centers in Tripoli. Today's evacuation comes after 62 refugees from Syria, Sudan, and Somalia were evacuated from Tripoli to UNHCR's emergency transit center in Timișoara, Romania, before traveling onwards to Norway. UNHCR is grateful to states which have come forward with evacuation places, but stresses that detainees are arriving at a faster pace than people are departing. Also on Libya, our humanitarian colleagues tell us that six health workers have been killed and seven injured in the fighting in Tripoli, with two clearly marked ambulances having been hit by shelling on Tuesday and Wednesday. And I'm happy to announce that Haiti and Timor-Leste have paid their 2019 budget dues. This takes the total of fully paid-up member states to 102. Are there any questions for me before we turn to Monica? Yes, Maggie.
Thanks, Farhan. On Ambassador Swan, can you tell us when he's going to start his new posting in Somalia? And can you also confirm that the Secretary General was particularly interested in finding an envoy from one of the P5 countries to protect them from another repeat of the PNG status that Mr. Haysom experienced?
Well, we've made clear our views on the question of whether Mr. Haysom could be granted the status of persona non grata, and we've made clear our stance against that. At the same time, of course, we needed someone who would be on the ground and able to do the job, and we're very grateful to have Mr. Swan. We'll try to bring him in to the field of operations as soon as possible. And as for the selection process, the process was simply designed to determine who was the best possible candidate. Yes. Stefano.
Thank you. I read the speech that the Secretary General just delivered in Europe, and especially the part on the migrants and refugees. I see that he also looks for the support of the Pope. He mentioned the Pope and its role in practically saying the same thing they've been saying, that the respect of human rights has to be always assured. Now, is the Secretary General worried that in certain countries, just mentioned Italy, but not only Italy, in the last European elections, actually who got the most of the votes are politicians that are completely on the opposite side? They've been criticizing the Pope, too, spreading the message that the policy should be different on about welcoming those migrants. So my question, specific question, is this: did the Secretary General, in delivering that speech, was supporting the Pope and whoever in Europe in this moment try to change the policy of certain government toward the migrants and refugees.
Well, just to repeat, the entire point of what the Secretary General said today on migrants was to veer different groups, whether politicians, governments, or others in Europe and even outside of Europe, to avoid the scapegoating of people on the basis of their status as migrants or refugees. He made very clear that we want to avoid an us versus them approach. And to repeat what he said, scapegoating migrants and closing our doors to asylum seekers does not protect but shame this heritage. So regarding that, the Secretary General and the Pope have very similar views, that they both continue to speak out on behalf of the basic rights and dignity of all peoples, including those who have had to leave their homes and travel to other countries.
So just a quick follow-up. So I can write that his speech was a support of the call of the Pope to change policy in Europe toward migrants.
Well, I mean, their two approaches are the same on this. They both stand for the basic human rights and dignity of all people, including those of migrants and refugees. Yes.
Thank you, Farhan. Narendra Modi has taken an oath as the Prime Minister of India now for the second term. What's the message of the Secretary General now that the formal swearing-in ceremony has happened? Will the SGB sending any message to him? Thank you.
Well, of course, we will look forward to working with the government as it has now taken office. India is, as you know, a very valuable partner of the United Nations, and the Secretary General has worked very closely with the Prime Minister, including, as you've seen, with his work on the issues of climate change. Yes.
Thank you, Farhan. Sorry to bring this up so late, but when the Secretary General was in Vienna not long ago, and did he run into he was there the same day when the government fell, when the alt-right was screaming against migrants, when, you know, did he run into any of this? Did he say anything about it?
Well, I believe we mentioned that he did meet with the president, Alexander van der Bellen, and he discussed issues concerning Austria with him.
Yeah, well, the president is not part of this group.
That's as much as I have to say on that. Yes, Mr. Badi.
Thank you, Farhan. Is the United Nations invited to attend the Manama meeting concerning financing of the Middle East, and who will represent the organization at the meeting?
At this stage, I'm not aware that we will have anyone present. Our office, special coordinator, Mr. Nikolai Mladenov, did receive an invitation, but we were considering it. I don't believe he is intending, however. Maria.
Thanks, Farhan. So I didn't see much updates on the situation with detained employees, United Nations employees in Kosovo. Do you have any information about the investigation, if actually the investigation is going on? Because I know this only from the words of Russian diplomat. And also there is very concerning information about the health of this Russian diplomat. Will there be any legal actions because of this? Thank you.
What I can say is that the two staff members involved in that incident, one of whom, as you pointed out, was Russian, and one of whom is from Kosovo, sustained injuries and had to be hospitalized. The details regarding the incident are still being clarified. At this stage, based on a full assessment by medical experts at North Mitrovica Hospital and the UNMIC medical team, it's imperative that our staff member be transferred, our international staff member be transferred to a facility that can offer specialist treatment in line with the injuries that he sustained. Regarding the possibility of further response, what I can say is that the special representative, Zahir Tanin, has called for Kosovo to respect the immunity of all UN staff members in Kosovo, And he has further urged all parties to abide by the principles of the rule of law and dignity for all, to life, liberty, and to help restore calm and security in the area. Yes, please.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon. I have a question.
Thank you. Here we go. I have a question on internet censorship in Africa. Several authoritarian governments in Africa are using internet shutdowns as a tool of repression. Since the beginning of the year, six African countries have turned off access to internet with the cooperation of foreign mobile operators, including France, Orange. Both the UN and the African Union have passed resolutions condemning internet shutdowns as a violation of human rights. So the question is, has the Secretary General addressed this issue with some of the African nations?
Well, we clearly want all nations, whether in Africa or elsewhere, to make sure that the free flow of information can proceed. And that includes through the internet. We would be concerned about any efforts to cut off the flow of information. And with that, have a good afternoon. Monica, all yours.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's good to see you again. If you have any questions, Zachary, go ahead.
Thanks, Monica. Back to Africa. Has the president weighed in yet on the Anglophone crisis in Cameroon?
Zachary, thanks for your question. Actually, the PJ is concerned about the tensions in Cameroon. She calls for all parties to respect international humanitarian law. Mrs. Pinoza also urges all parties in Cameroon to end acts of violence, to engage in a broad-based, inclusive dialogue with a view to finding a political solution to this crisis. And at the same time, to ensure as well that civilians in Cameroon are protected. Thank you. Mr. Abadi and then Stefano. Mr. Abadi, go ahead.
Thank you, Monica. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, I believe you mentioned that the working group on the restructuring of Security Council has begun its meeting. Mm-hmm. Now, this group has met for a quarter of a century. Now, what do they hope to achieve and in what period of time?
Okay, the good news is that intergovernmental negotiations are going on as we speak as well. Today is the second day of this two-day meeting. They are having an interactive discussion today, member states. You're right, there has been some discussions. In fact, this is actually the fifth in this current session. We are expecting from the co-facilitators who are the ambassadors of Luxembourg and the United Arab Emirates to produce an outcome document by June. Yesterday, we had actually some information here. Right now, there are the discussions and the reflections are focusing on five key issues or clusters. The categories of membership, actually, the question of the veto in the Security Council, but also regional representation, size of a possible enlarged Security Council, and working methods of the Council, which is a very important step, which belongs to the revitalization of the United Nations as well in the PJ's agenda. And last but not least, the relationship between the Security Council and the General Assembly. And from the conversations that are being held right now, we can, for instance, say that there is support by the majority of the countries to have a regional presence representative, for instance, from African countries. But as you know, the conversations are still going on, and we will have more for you as soon as we get it. An outcome document will be published. But thank you for your question. Stefano, go ahead.
Well, maybe because we share the office with Mr. Abadi, we think a lot alike. So my question was the same. Mm-hmm. And I only can add one thing. Because mm-hmm. I understand that the President of the General Assembly, you know, is a referee here, if you want, or has to
be a referee
or neutral.
Ah, okay.
He cannot, she cannot take real position. But
sure.
But still, she's the president of the General Assembly, and she must know what the majority of the members, they all vote. And we know that any reform of the Security Council will have to pass through a vote of the General Assembly. So there is any chance that before she she finished her mandate, that there will be next month, actually it's very soon, the election of the next
on president. On the 4th of June
exactly.
At 10 a.m.
So any chance, or we have to wait for her memoirs, that she will, and memoirs about her this experience, that we would like to know instead before, that she will actually express what the General Assembly will, what is the majority, the large majority of the will about what the Security Council should be for the next, you know, for the next years, what should be the face of this institution that, like Mr. Abadi said, has been for 40 years that we've been talking about reform and nothing happens.
No, absolutely. And first of all, you are precisely, you are spot on in what you say, that she is a convener and a facilitator. And the decisions are actually made by member states in this very member state-driven process. But the PGA is dedicating her focus and her efforts in having a productive process. And from the very beginning, she said that the process should be an inclusive one, a very transparent one. And there is an understanding, as we know, Stefano, that the Security Council does not reflect the reality of the contemporary world. And I'm not saying anything new here. Analysts are saying that. Member states are saying that as well. And the PGA is supportive, of this unbiased, constructive manner, inclusive, and as part of her priorities. It's one of her seven priorities, as you know so well. What she's asking as well is that this process that is coming to an end now, and I think you all will have the opportunity of asking her directly when she comes for our next press conference next month. Her appeal is that this has to be a collegial, a harmonious discussion. So where all parties, if they lead to consensus or if they dissent, but that should be done in a collegial manner. And at the end of the day, it's about many things in this house about a negotiation, about a dialogue, and that's where the process is right now. But I think this is actually one of the topics that we are looking into to bring for you everything we get so that you can, have the answers that we will have when the process is over. Also, addressed, that's what I meant. Yes, how are you?
My name is Dimo Kilo. I'm with the Tribune Online.
You are with?
The Tribune Online from New Delhi, India.
New Delhi, India. Okay, welcome. Yeah.
One of the sustainable development goals of the UN General Assembly is good health and well-being.
Uh-huh.
And there was this assembly, WHA assembly in Geneva recently, which has concluded.
Uh-huh.
And as the president and the UN thinks that we should not leave anybody out. Now, what I understand is that Taiwan was not allowed to participate in that. So, is there any view of the president as to how can this be, can be removed, anomaly can be removed so that at least it gets to participate sometime in future,
The president.
And what I understood is that very recently I learned that Taiwan has done lot of, good work in the health sector. Like they've eradicated a lot of things like malaria and chikungunya and those kind of things.
By the way, so sorry to interrupt you. By the way, we have been talking for a while, but I'm not sure you have your microphone. So in this case, your question is not coming out to the world.
I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry. But I think...
Have you... okay.
Yes.
My name is Deepak Arora from the Tribune Online, New Delhi, India.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, World Health Assembly concluded in Geneva, and Taiwan was not allowed to participate there.
Uh-huh.
Now, one of the sustainable development goals of UN is good health and well-being.
Mm-hmm.
And when we keep listening to the president and the secretary general, they keep saying that we should not leave any part of the world,
Sure.
And so Has the president given any thought to it as to how this lacuna can be removed so that people of Taiwan can participate? Because at the end of the day, it is people who will benefit. And I was quite surprised to hear that Taiwan has done good work in the health sector, you know. And they have been able to overcome malaria, chikungunya, and a lot of other things which are prevalent in third world countries, you know.
I think now we can understand your question. No, it's okay. It's the technology and the arrangements here in the room. Basically, any arrangements or participation in events for the WHO, the World Health Organization, I would actually refer you to them. You're talking about the assembly, actually, of the annual assembly of the organization, which is actually led by Dr. Tedros. And I would really refer you to our colleagues there. The theme of this presidency is making the UN relevant to all people. The president has been working very hard on this particular theme, which actually is a summary of our seven priorities. And right now, I think you are probably aware, we are working on this concert in Antigua and Barbuda, where we are, the president is actually focusing and counting on the participation of people everywhere in the world, not only in the Caribbean, but also everywhere in the world, in order to tackle plastic pollution, which is, by the way, a very important health issue as well. As we know, if you don't do anything, there will be more plastic in the oceans by 2015 than fish. And this affects everything. Affects also the health of human beings. So this is basically what I have to tell you. The participation of people everywhere is very, very important for her. But if you don't have any other questions, I thank you very much, and I see you tomorrow, but I think Carla has something. Okay, thank Carla, you have the last word.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Certain things that the President of the General Assembly has been concerned with is the rising inequality globally. Mm-hmm. Does she have any comment about Philip Alston's latest report on the fact that the austerity measures in England have driven one-fifth of the population in Great Britain below the poverty line, and at the same time, hundreds of millions of dollars are being spent on weddings for the monarchy? And this seems to be one of the most glaring examples of inequality. Also, Angela Merkel has spoken out against the rise of the extreme right wing in the elections in Europe and the rise of anti-Semitism in Germany. And yet it was Angela Merkel some 10 years ago who imposed the austerity measures, which have driven a large part of Europe into poverty. The Greeks live in ghastly situation. So these austerity measures are certainly increasing inequality. So does she have any comment about this report? It just was issued recently by Philip Alston.
Sure. I'll have to look into it for you and then bring you the answer. Okay? Thank you very much.
That's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.